Hello, Cheryl and Anne and George, right? And when Philippe. It's good to see you all. I'm here to share from I Am That by Nisargadatta Maharaj. And I'm sharing from the third message, which is called The Living Present. And this is my third time sharing from this message. So I'm starting in the middle of this particular message. I'm just going to read this sentence and see if I need to back up any or if we can just go from here. So the question, which might be able to stand on its own, the question is pain a cosmic fact or purely mental? And Nisargadatta's answer is, the universe is complete. And where there is completeness, where nothing lacks, what can give pain? And the questioner says, the universe may be complete as a whole, but incomplete in details. And Nisargadatta says, a part of the whole seen in relation to the whole is also complete. Only when in isolation it becomes deficient and thus a seat of pain. What makes for isolation? The questioner says, limitations of the mind, of course. The mind cannot see the whole for the part. Nisargadatta says, good enough. The mind, by its very nature, divides and opposes. Can there be some other mind which unites and harmonizes, which sees the whole in the part, and the part as totally related to the whole? The questioner says, the other mind, where does one look for it? And Nisargadatta says, in going beyond the limiting, dividing, and opposing mind, in ending the mental process as we know it, when this comes to an end, that mind is born. So I'm going to stop there. I needed to read this far before I paused and talked because, you know, the back and forth wasn't complete, which is kind of funny because we're talking about completeness here. But again, the original question was, is pain a cosmic fact or purely mental? And Nisargadatta's answer was basically, the universe is complete, and where there is completeness, where can there be pain? And the questioner, of course, says, well, it's not, basically he said, it's not completely complete. You know, kind of like it, you know, from a distance, you know, if you remember that song by Bette Midler, from a distance, it may look complete. But if you get up close and you look at the details, there's some incompleteness here. And basically, Nisargadatta's response to that was, this really depends on the mind from which you're looking. In fact, he asked a question that really led the questioner to find that answer for himself. The mind, you know, that divides and opposes, he says. If it was my wording, if it was Regina speaking, she'd probably say divides and rejects. That mind isn't going to see completeness. And this is kind of an important point. One thing that spiritual students do is they learn about the true self. You know, they learn things like, you know, everything is perfect, everything is complete, you know, whatever else someone may say about the true self. And they think that that is supposed to apply in their perception when actually their perception is still coming from the mind that divides and opposes. Their perception is not the perception of the true self. Their perception is the perception of the false self. And sometimes people will even lie to themselves, you know, like, oh, it's all perfect, when they don't really see it as perfect. They're using that to avoid looking at something that they need to look at. I actually made kind of a similar post this morning. You know, one thing that over my, how many years have I been doing this? Since, 13 years. In my 13-year career with, you know, being a part of the course community, you know, one thing I've heard course students say many times is a healed mind doesn't plan. But they're saying that when they don't have a healed mind. I heard a story once, which I think is absolutely perfect. I had this one friend named Herb, who used to live, you know, just a few miles. I think he lived 8 miles from Phil Frisk. Phil Frisk is our chairman of the board. And this was many years ago, long before Awakening Together. And Herb and Phil only lived about 8 miles apart from each other, and they were going to get together for something. And so Phil said, well, why don't we get together on Saturday morning? You know, what time would be good for you? And, you know, and Phil was also trying to say, whose house should we meet at, your house or my house? And Herb was like, well, you know, a healed mind doesn't plan. let's not set a time, and let's not decide where we'll meet. Let's just let intuition guide us and it'll be perfect. You know, so Phil decided to go along with it. And I guess intuition got the time right. I think they both left their houses around 9 o'clock. But Herb drove to Phil's house and Phil drove to Herb's house and they missed each other. You know, which I thought was a really funny story when I heard about that. But, you know, this just shows how ridiculous we get. We hear about the self. We learn about the self. Listen to that sentence. A healed mind doesn't plan. It doesn't say an unhealed mind doesn't plan. And in fact, the post that I made today was something like, a healed mind doesn't plan, but my mind is not healed. So planning time in my schedule for contemplation and meditation is a good idea. And I agree with that. Because if I don't plan time, you know what my ego is going to do? It's going to be too busy with all the other stuff to get around ever to the meditation and the contemplation. So this is kind of similar in that, you know, Nisargadatta Maharaj is helping the questioner to see the reason your life is not pain-free and the reason you don't perceive completeness is because of the mind you're seeing through. Don't expect a pain-free existence when you are looking through the mind that divides and opposes. Don't expect to see completion when you are looking through the mind that divides and opposes. You need to, and the words he used, I think, were find the other mind. Let's see, what were his exact words? Oh, he just said, can there be some other mind? Again, he's kind of leading the questioner to think for himself. He says, can there be some other mind which unites and harmonizes, right? And the questioner is the one that says, the other mind, where does one look for it? And so here's the real answer to this entire discussion. In going beyond the limiting, dividing, and opposing mind, in ending the mental process as we know it, when this comes to an end, that mind is born. I believe we call that Manonessa around here. It's also been known as Nirvana. In A Course in Miracles, it's called Heaven, or as we're currently seeing, The Last Judgment. You know, he is saying when you go all the way to the point that the mind you see through now ends, dies, final death of the ego, then the mind will arise, through which you will see and experience no pain, and you will see completeness. How many of us try and have that experience, though, with the current mind? Right? We try to force the current mind to have the experience of the true self instead of focusing our attention on letting go of or allowing the death of the current mind. And that's our mistake. So a healed mind does plan. An unhealed mind does plan. An unhealed mind plans to allow enough time in the day to do the spiritual practices that are necessary to ending that healed mind. Right? An unhealed mind does plan. It's the healed mind that doesn't plan. But we want to do that planning with at least the right mind rather than the wrong mind. Again, it's the right mind that would make sure that we set aside that time for our meditation, our contemplation. So the answer to the original question, which was, is pain a cosmic fact or purely mental? The real answer is it's purely mental. However, you know, in order to see that, what you really need to do is engage in the spiritual practices that will allow that mind to be annihilated. That's what Manonasa means, mind annihilation. Let that mind be annihilated. And when in the mind that replaces it, when it's annihilated, then you will see that there is no pain. Then you will see that everything is complete. Then you will see that everything is perfect. But your job is to engage in the spiritual practices that lead to mind annihilation. So the questioner now, referring to that other mind, the mind that arises when the dividing mind dies, the questioner said, that mind, the problem of joy and no longer? And Nisargadatta says, not as we know them, as desirable or repugnant. It becomes rather a question of love seeking expression and meeting with obstacles. The inclusive mind is love in action, battling against circumstances, initially frustrated, ultimately victorious. Now, I have to confess to you, I have no idea what this means. And sometimes that happens when I read Nisargadatta. Sometimes when I read Nisargadatta, I have no idea what he's talking about. And what I don't know is if it was a translation problem or if he was a, is this, tell me if this is a proper expression. I don't even know if I'm making this word up. If he was a cantankerous ass, is cantankerous a word? If he just messed with people. I mean, you know, sometimes I think he just messed with people. Cantankerous, that's the word I'm looking for. Let's look at that word up and just see what that, see if I was using it appropriately. Cantankerous. Cantankerous. Okay, yeah, bad-tempered, argumentative, uncooperative. Sometimes I think that that was a part of his nature. And he just confused people on purpose. I know that to be a fact. Let me read this sentence again. So for me, everything was very, very clear. You know, that you can't see perfection through the mind that divides and opposes. But if you take the steps to allow that mind to be annihilated, or as he says, when that comes to an end, then this other mind is born. And through that mind, you can see perfection. And so the questioner is asking, now again, the questioner is coming from a Hindu education where a part of suffering is seeking for joy and trying to avoid sorrow. And so with that in mind, the questioner says, so in that mind, meaning the new mind that arises, in that mind, the problem of joy and sorrow exists no longer, question mark, you know, which means seeking for joy and avoiding sorrow, right? That problem will no longer exist in that mind. Which, you know, I would have thought, yeah, that's probably true. But Nisargadatta's answer is completely different, and I'll look at it very slowly and see if we can understand it. He says, not as we know them, as desirable or repugnant. So in that way, he's agreeing that in this mind, you're not going to be trying to achieve joy, desire joy, and avoid sorrow, right? He agrees in this mind, in this new mind, that is true. Not as we know them, as desirable or repugnant. He then says, it becomes rather a question of love seeking expression and meeting with obstacles. Now, this is where he loses me. We're no longer seeking joy and avoiding sorrow, but love is seeking expression and meeting with obstacles. The inclusive mind is love in action. That I understand. The inclusive mind is love in action. But here's the part I don't understand. Battling against circumstances. Initially frustrated, ultimately victorious. All right, so I'm pausing and maybe some understanding is beginning to arise here. We've got time to let this happen. I don't think Nisargadatta is talking about Manonessa, which I originally thought he was. I think it's possible that Nisargadatta is talking about an intermediary state of mind, such as the state of mind that awakens to consciousness, but not the absolute. Yeah, the second level of waking. The reason I say that is because I have heard different people talk about when they awakened how frustrating it was at first. Because the old rules didn't apply anymore, the old conditioning didn't work anymore, you know, and learning to live in the new state was very frustrating. And I do think in the course it says somewhere about, it uses the word disorienting. And so I think what Nisargadatta is probably talking about here is that once this new mind arises, and again, this would be not Manonessa. This would be, you know, what we'll call awakening to consciousness. Because there really is still there's still a self there. It's not the ego self, but there's still a self there, and that self is trying to understand and make sense. And it doesn't know how to live. You know, it's kind of like, well, you heard the term being born again. It's kind of like being born again, but you don't know how to live as your new self yet. You know, there's a lot of frustration and a lot of challenges in the beginning. And then he says, however, it's ultimately victorious. In fact, I'm reading Bernadette Roberts' book, and she said when she awoke to consciousness, which she says is not the final awakening, she says most people would expect that awakening to consciousness would be blissful, and she said, but it's not. She said it was very painful. And again, for all the reasons we're talking about, because it's just a completely different way of seeing. And, you could say it doesn't come with a manual. You know how people say children don't come with a manual? This awakening to consciousness doesn't come with a manual either. And she talked about how painful it was and how hard it was to adjust. But then once the adjustment happened, once the period of adjustment ended, then, you know, it was quite joyous. But she also talks about this initial period of adjustment, which was extremely difficult. So I think that's what he's talking about here. So I think I probably misinterpreted him above when he said, when this mind comes to an end, that mind is born. And I interpreted that as Manonasa. Now I think he just means when the ego mind comes to an end, consciousness as self, that mind is born. Consciousness, or what Regina calls the second principle of God. And then he's saying that can be a very difficult challenge. That's what he's telling him, I believe. And so the questioner says, between the spirit and the body, is it love that provides the bridge? And Nisargadatta says, what else? Mind creates the abyss, the heart crosses it. So interestingly, the question was between the spirit and the body. And I'm wondering if the questioner means attachment to the body, the belief that I am the body, right? And the spirit being that awakened mind consciousness. So between the spirit and the body, between consciousness and the belief I am the body, is it love that provides that bridge to get us from one to the other, really from I am the body to the spirit? And Nisargadatta says, what else? Mind creates the abyss. The heart crosses it. And I'm going to look up the word abyss. I'm thinking right now it would be like a gap. See, yeah, a deep or seemingly bottomless chasm. So mind creates the apparent gap. I'm going to call it a gorge. You know, that seems like you can't cross it. So you can't get from the I am the body idea to awakening to consciousness, right? Mind creates that apparent abyss, that apparent gorge. But the heart is able to build a bridge across that so that one can travel from the I am the body idea to the awakening to consciousness. Now, I just think it's kind of interesting because for me, this is something that's happened twice and in just a few days. Twice in just a few days now, I have read about how difficult the transition is when awakening to consciousness. And I don't, although I do remember a few people mentioning, I just realized I have my earbuds in. I don't have to because you guys aren't talking. I'm taking them off. I have certainly heard people talk about the difficult or the challenge in adjusting, but I really haven't heard it described until just the last few days. It might even be a painful adjustment. Again, I read that with Bernadette Roberts just a few days ago. And then now we have Nisargadatta saying that. And I think this is probably one reason I had trouble understanding it. I'm probably one of those people, like Bernadette says, you know, you would expect this awakening to be blissful. And I think that I probably expected awakening to consciousness to be blissful. And I think what we're hearing now is at least that may not always be the case. I don't want to say it's always painful. But I think we need to see that that maybe there is going to be some pain and some struggle, and I think that's good to know. I don't think I knew that as a possibility until just a few days ago, and now confirmed by Nisargadatta. So there we go. That takes us to a new message, but I don't want to begin a new message with just 4 minutes to go. So I think what I'll do is play a song. So I'm opening up iTunes. It's a little slow. Everything about my computer and my phone are a little slow. I think they're both a little old, but I'm not ready to change. Because it's such a difficult adjustment. That's true. When you get rid of an old computer and you get a new computer, it's a very difficult adjustment. And when you get rid of an old phone and get a new phone, it's a very difficult adjustment. I think that's probably. And when you get rid of an old mind and get a new mind, it's a very difficult adjustment. So I have a slow computer and a slow phone. All right, here's let's see, what song do I want to play? I'm just going to play this one. It's called It's Almost Time by David Wilcox.
Just across the sea on this world so round, sun shining hot right now. And even though the winter still surrounds this town, I can still feel that sun somehow. When I know that my sun will shine, just as sure as this world can spin, I can hold on fire, 'cause it's almost time for that sun to come round again. So I'll walk beside the sea on this frozen ground, where there once was a warm weather crowd. Even though that summer's been a long time gone, I can still feel that sun somehow. When I know that my sun will shine, just as sure as this world can spin, I can hold on fire, 'cause it's almost time for that sun to come round again. When your love grows cold and your heart goes dark, and the blame seems to fall on you, well, look how seasons must change, and don't think it's so strange that your love goes circles too. And just know that your sun will shine, just as sure as this world can spin. And I know you'll find that it's almost time for that love to come round. We can hold on fine, 'cause it's almost time for that love to come round again.
All right, so I think the few of us that were here to hear that were very lucky. I think, I always like to be prepared, and I think it's good to know that awakening to consciousness could be difficult. It doesn't have to be, but I think it's good to know that it could be. So if that happens to be our experience, we'll know it's one of the normals, right? All right, letting go. Bye.